Hi, my name's Madalena Kay, and I'm the host of the podcast AI and You, produced by Europod in partnership with Podium Podcast, Agence France-Presse, and Cora Media. In AI and You, we deal with the history of AI and how it is having an impact on our lives. From social relationships to employment, from climate change to wars and security. Is AI changing our world for the better or the worse? Come and check it out for yourself. Subscribe to AI and You wherever you listen to podcasts.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Europod. Episode 6, Should We Stop Traveling? After 5 episodes focusing on Santorini, I now would like to take a step back, take a look at how overtourism is impacting places and communities on a European scale. I found the perfect person to talk about that, an academic expert on the subject. His name is Antonio Paolo Russo. He's a university teacher of urban geography in Tarragona, Spain, and he coordinated PhD programs in tourism and leisure. Dr. Russo is the author of many publications in academic journals and books on the subject, and he's currently leading the European project SmartDest, tackling tourism mobilities and social exclusion.
We've always been aware of the fact that tourism is a generator of prosperity for local communities, for regions that are destinations of tourism flows. And we've always been aware that there is a negative side to it, which is more complex to tackle and to analyze and even to communicate. But there has been for many years an assumption that anyway it was worth. So the benefits would always outweigh the cost, at least in policy discourses that are justifying the fact that there are investments in tourism and that there is a sort of a blind faith towards tourism development as a lasting sense prosperity generator for places that do not have many other opportunities. And then in the academia and in the public opinion, we started to note, and this was around the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s, that there were places that were starting to suffer because of an excess of tourism. But we could say that for many years, this is almost anecdotic. And the word over tourism is, in fact, very recent. We started talking about that, but in fact, it was already there.
So what is over tourism and what are its consequences?
This evidence about depopulation trends, so residents that are displaced or that decided to go away from places which are over-touristed, which is something that hints at questions of resilience of cities. We have evidence about booming housing costs, which has been facilitated by the boom of collaborative hospitality, as it's called, Airbnb and the rest. We have evidence about worst salaries paid in the tourist sector in situations of a very strong competitive climate, so an increase in precarious work in places which are over-touristed. And we have evidence about the effects that overcrowding, which is only a part of over-tourism, maybe the most visible part, but the effects that overcrowding have on the possibility that other people, residents, workers, students, can access the resources of the city, like public space, transport infrastructure.
What Dr. Russo said really resonates with the situation I witnessed in Santorini, only on a larger scale. In 2018, a report was made by the European Parliament, more specifically by the European Parliament's Committee on Transport and Tourism, or TRAN. The aim of this report was to study the phenomenon of over-tourism in the EU.
What emerges from the Tram report is that we are not talking anymore about a few places in Europe. We are talking about a very large number of places. And those who are not suffering of over-tourism may be the next, because the trends are pushing in that direction. That report was a very good moment to have, let's say, an analytical approach towards over-tourism that made sense. It's presenting the situation as it is and maybe developing a little bit of scenarios of the type of places which are more vulnerable to over-tourism. Okay, so what it does is to present some indicators, to present some dimension of analysis that should have fed the policy debate.
After this report, the problem was stated. What about policy? Well, since 2018, the issue of over-tourism in Europe is still at the very beginning of the policy cycle. In 2019, the European Parliament organized a conference, slowly starting to imagine which kind of policies the European Union should adopt, that will translate into guidelines for cities. Then COVID happened, and it froze the debate. But some big cities over Europe impacted by this phenomenon didn't wait for the EU institutions to tackle the issue to act locally.
We have many cities like Barcelona or Berlin or Paris or Amsterdam that started from the bottom up to create some regulatory regimes, to make big decisions, even to observe some important discursive changes regarding the idea of unlimited capacity of growth of tourism in cities. But it comes a point when places, especially big cities in the West, realize that this is almost a structural, that there is very little that you can do to limit the overcrowding, the overflow of tourists.
One example of this limit is happening because of the privatization of transport infrastructures, a problem that exists all over Europe, and especially in Greece. How do we expect regulating tourist arrivals in the name of sustainability when ports and airports are privately owned and don't have any financial interest acting against over-tourism? It's a structural problem, and it's difficult to solve it given the diversity of interests involved and the polarization of opinions.
So I want to make an example of how far we are from having an agreement about what has happened in the past and what is likely to happen in the future. My example is that when there started to be the first sign of recovery of tourism in Barcelona last year, the first debate that everybody had, all the important economic stakeholders and policy stakeholders around here, was about the necessity to have a further terminal of the airport of Barcelona, or an expansion of the second terminal of the airport of Barcelona. And the idea was, yeah, let's fight against this crisis by bringing more economic activity, by enabling connection to make the economy stronger. And obviously, everybody that has a little bit of a critical eye would say, okay, so in this moment, talking about coming out of a crisis, which in among other things has also been generated in a context of hypermobility, by expanding further the attraction capacity of a city which already has been under siege because of excess of tourism, excess of vehicle, excess of contamination, excess of cruises, and also in a moment in which everybody should be worried about mitigating the climate crisis and reducing emissions, is total nonsense. And the European Union didn't say basically anything. So the European Union was saying, yeah, we need to fight against emissions. We need a greener model of global mobility. But they never said we are not going to give you money to build another airport in Barcelona.
We are not yet at the stage in which the European Commission has a very clear position on how to mitigate the problems generated by over-tourism. But this is an emergency. One reason for the EU to take responsibility now is that in some places there are not even enough people left to fight anymore.
One of the things that is happening in all places that went through over tourism for a long period of time, like Venice, like Santorini, is that the local community that would protest and cope against over-tourism is basically not there anymore. I mean, Venice has lost half of its population in the last 30 years. I'm sure that the local residents of Santorini are not the same local residents that were there 20 years ago. And we are already now in a situation in which certain places which are over-touristed are doomed to follow the same path until the erasure of local communities, simply because there is no critical mass of people that would like fight against that anymore.
According to Dr. Russo, the European Union needs to explicitly recognize that residents in tourist cities are in a vulnerable position and start having a real European urban agenda. Another solution is to link the fight of Europe against climate change with a fight against overtourism. Because debating about the degrowth of global mobility is completely part of the debate against the climate crisis. When Dr. Russo talked to me about this degrowth, I wondered, are we currently talking about policies that would regulate the number of people traveling?
We have to recognize the fact that mobility cannot be forbidden. It is not in our mindset to forbid mobility. It's not in synchrony with our ideals, our constitution. But we must understand that mobility cannot be cheap. Because if it is cheap, the natural trend is that people go in the same places, and these places are basically destructive, socially and economically, and environmentally. So we need to think in terms of what is the societal acceptance of a mobility that is not cheap anymore, and that is using more and more non-contaminating vessels to move around. So, especially airport mobility, airline mobility, cruise mobility, which is shown to have the worst environmental and social effect per capita by traveler. Of course, we all love tourism. We are tourists, we are travelers. We recognize that tourism has a very important role in our society, in cultural terms, in economic terms, of course, but even in cultural terms, it's part of leisure, and leisure is a very important part of how our society is organized. But we need to recognize that there is a danger, and that this danger has to be tackled with the appropriate weapons. And we have, it is a very complex problem, because it is very difficult to say, okay, if you are a businessman, you're welcome to come here for cheap because you're going to bring a work opportunity to my region, but if you are a tourist, please don't come.
As policies cannot really act on tourist mobility, could we see it from the side of travelers? Maybe raising their awareness on this issue can make a difference.
I don't have a lot of faith, and even I don't rely on the fact that tourists should be educated, because tourists do not see citizens or do not have any kind of like direct understanding of what the tourist practice of places is doing to local residents.
After hearing Antonio Russo, I wanted to have some faith and think that maybe the young generation, who are becoming more and more aware of the problem, can contribute to solving it. So I contacted two of my friends, Lea and Melissa. Lea is French. Melissa is originally American. She has been living in France for many years. I asked them if they had been in places considered as victims of overtourism, and if knowing about this issue makes them rethink the way they travel.
I went to Amsterdam, London, and those kind of big cities. Unfortunately, I think I was young at that time when I traveled a lot. So actually, I think I didn't think about it. And I was just enjoying myself to visit every places, every museums. I think the first thing that it was my pleasure, and then I didn't think about the locals, I think.
Yeah, for me, it was really similar. When I first arrived in Europe, I actually visited a lot of these big touristic cities because that's what a lot of Americans do. So I definitely followed that trend in the beginning and was much less aware of the kind of tourism I was doing and the way it was impacting the locals. And as time went on, I was still visiting these big cities, but I definitely had another view of it. I remember in Barcelona, for example, seeing signs and even protests against tourism and then learning about it and, yeah, becoming more aware that this is a big problem and that I was in my own way contributing to it. But I definitely over time was looking to move away from the bigger cities and also do more slow travel. So, for example, instead of, you know, spending 1 week and visiting 5 cities in 1 week, nowadays what I try to do is just go to one city. And that's something I've done a couple times using websites like Workaway that give people a chance to stay for a couple weeks. I worked in hostels, for example. I worked in an art school.
Workaway is a website platform that puts you in contact with potential hosts. The idea is to work a few hours every day in exchange for a free place to stay. I used this platform to stay in a Swedish farm for 2 weeks and live like a local. Like Melissa, this experience changed the way I want to travel.
As Melissa, I think I started to feel that I was not feeling okay to just visit a city for 1 day, just take picture and then leave. For example, I started 3 years ago to bike a lot. So I started to travel by bike and it changed my way of living and also to experience traveling because you start to enjoy more the nature between two cities and what's outside. And then, by bike, you are really, really slow. You enjoy the travels.
As both of them start to enjoy slow travel, I can't help but think that the way most people travel is linked with our modern way of life, where everything has to be fast. We consume destination as fast as we consume material goods.
I would definitely agree that it's related to our way of life. It's obviously related to capitalism and overconsumption and all the bad things about living in the 21st century. And of course, you know, it's about image and social media. You get so much more attention on social media from a picture in Amsterdam or Venice or, you know, a city people can recognize than you would a picture, you know, in some small village that no one has heard of.
Also, knowing the impact that planes and cruise ships have on the environment, would you be ready to try alternative transportations to arrive at destination?
When I was younger, I didn't care to take the plane to go really, really far away in Europe or outside Europe. But yeah, I starting a few years ago to think that we have one planet, so we need to take care of what's around, the nature, everything. So the plane is not suitable in our world.
When I moved to Europe, my first reflex wasn't to travel with the plane because I was actually amazed at how practical and comfortable the trains were in France and pretty much all over Europe. And either other options like buses, hitchhiking, which is one of my favorite ways to get around. This is something I think we really take for granted in Europe. People don't realize that here we're really lucky to have especially the really good train systems. And yeah, it's a better way to travel. I mean, just going through France, going through the countryside, getting to look out the window and listen to music. It's a beautiful, slower way to travel.
When we think about travel, we think about huge travel when you go by a plane or something else. But, you know, for me, for example, every weekend I take the bike and bike with the train sometimes to go further in France, in the countryside. So every weekend I'm traveling in a way. I'm maybe 100 kilometers from home, but, you know, I'm in the mountains or in the forest, I don't know. So we can imagine that travel is also, like, really close from home.
Today's episode showed us that overtourism is established in societal debate and that this subject also established itself in European academic and institutional circles. It remains to be seen whether overtourism will actually make an entry on the European political agenda. This journey started in Santorini and ends today in Europe. I want to thank all the amazing people I had the chance to interview for the podcast series Hiperturismos. You show us that we can all, in our own level, be part of that change.
Do you want to hear more podcasts that get to the bottom of things, that stand out in the ambient noise? Join Europod. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our newsletter. Follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. Discover our brand new website at www.europod.eu and join us in our fight. Europod. Clear the noise. Start to listen.